Lazio. Yep, back to chat about the Campionato di Calcio. Whoops, autocorrect. Italiano. Today, with Fiorentina-Juventus coming up on Friday, we're having a look at the greatest one-sided hate match in the world and some classic matches of yesteryear, like the time Ruby Baggio went back to Florence and said, Frankie, do you remember me? And also this.
Del Piero esterno straordinario e la Juventus è in vantaggio.
Bentornati. Just myself and James Horncastle this week. Hello, James.
Hey, Jimbo.
How are things going there in the only title race in Europe?
Very tight, isn't it?
Mm.
Just 1 point between them. And I think if you...
Them being Napoli and Juventus.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Napoli, what did they do last weekend?
Napoli beat a fairly decent Benevento side. 2-0 on Sunday night with another lob from Dries Mertens. Beautiful goal.
Ooh, it does sound good, doesn't it? And how did Juve respond to that?
Oh, with seven goals, Jimbo, against Sassuolo.
Wow, seven goals.
Yeah. Scansuolo, as they were calling them. Which is the verb scansare, which means to step aside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. That's good work. Where was that? The Gazzetta, was it?
Yeah, that was just trending on Twitter whilst that game was going on.
Right. Three of those goals scored by Gonzalo Higuain, who's back in form ahead of the Spurs clash coming up next week.
Yeah, he had gone six games without a goal, and he was saying, look, I know people are pointing out that this is my worst season from a goal-scoring perspective up until that point, but you know, I'd settled to score 10 or 15 goals fewer as long as I only score the big ones in the big games,
right.
Which is something that has always been a criticism of him. And he's been doing that. We saw in the Cup last Wednesday, he got the only goal away in Bergamo against Atalanta. And his first hat-trick for Juventus, albeit when they were already 4-0 up, but some really good finishes from Pepita.
OK, goals in big games. Next Tuesday, I'm saying it's a big game.
Uh-huh.
At the Allianz Stadium, when they host Spurs, is a massive game. Before that, though, Fiorentina on Friday, and they did a win this weekend. The first in, what, six games?
Yeah, they did. And a lot of tension around Fiorentina at the moment because they'd lost two games in a row going into this game, and humiliatingly so, their last one, a 4-1 defeat at home to Hellas Verona, which led, 3,000 fans to camp outside the stadium, demand an audience with the directors. Then a delegation of the ultras went to the training ground on Saturday to remind the players of what they expect from them. And
that was kind of them.
That was very nice. Yeah, apparently they were very civil.
Leave a post-it or something.
Stefano Pioli, the Fiorentina manager, said that they did acknowledge that we played well at various stages of the season. It's just the last two games have not been good enough. And they went into the Apennine derby against Bologna,
which is an interesting game because it featured two goals scored directly from corners.
Yeah, the gol Olimpo, as they call it, because the first ever goal scored directly from a corner was by an Argentine against a Uruguayan team which had just won the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
This was very unusual because Fiorentina scored the first goal directly from a corner kick, and then 4 minutes later, Bologna responded by doing exactly the same.
Although that did go in off a Fiorentina defender. I wasn't sure if that entirely counted in the same way.
Well, the Fiorentina goal, that was bureaucrats, the pedants back at the league, basically ruled that an own goal Bologna's goalkeeper, Antonio Mirante, because he kind of just touches it. But brought back memories of Massimo Palanca. Do you remember who used to play for Catanzaro, who scored 13 goals directly from corner kicks?
That's remarkable.
Primarily because one of his teammates, Claudio Ranieri, he used to jump at the near post just before Palanca used to take these corner kicks. So the goalkeeper had no idea where the ball was, and then it was too late to react, and it just crept in at the near post.
Claudio Ranieri. Federico Chiesa getting the other goal in Fiorentina's 2-1 win over Bologna, and looking good, Federico Chiesa. Other news? Well, Lazio had their second straight defeat in the league. Inter have now gone 8 without a win against their former idol, Walter Zenga's Crotone. Sorry, that's not 8 without a win against Crotone, but it was a 1-1 draw, no, Saturday night?
1-1 draw, yeah.
So that's now 8 games without a win. And Roma did win 1-0 at Hellas Verona. So now the race for those two other top four places behind Napoli and Juve It's tight, isn't it? Those three teams, Lazio, Inter and Roma, just 2 points between them.
Yeah, it's surprising because Lazio had an opportunity to go, 7 points clear of Inter, really, in the last two match days. If they'd beaten Milan when Inter dropped points against Spal, and if they'd beaten Genoa at home when Inter dropped points against Crotone, then they would be far clear of that chasing pack and really locking down third place and automatic qualification for the Champions League. And instead, Roma were the big winners of the weekend, with both of them dropping points and Roma getting back to winning ways. Cengiz Under scoring his first goal for the Giallorossi after just 43 seconds. And Di Francesco changing things up a bit, going back to the system that worked so well under Spalletti last year, with Nainggolan just playing off Dzeko in his favourite role where he hasn't been allowed to play all season.
I tell you what, James, let's order up some cappuccinos, because it's that time of day, and have a look through the papers. What do we got here? Oh, City has a new TV deal. And intriguingly, a country plagued by dismal coverage of their football has handed the rights to the one country even worse at television than them, Spain. Yeah, well, the Catalan group, in fact, have bought the rights, which means a little bit more money for City A clubs. They're now third in the Money League. They're close behind the Liga, but still less than half the revenues from TV of the Premier League, although crucially, they'll have a significantly bigger share of half-dressed women doing the coverage. Good to see. Italy have appointed a new manager. It's Gigi Di Biagio. He's going to handle these Euros. Two high-profile friendlies in March against Argentina and England. So the latter match, intriguingly, will feature two managers who've missed decisive international penalties. Long-term, Di Biagio faces a challenge for the position from Roberto Mancini and Antonio Conte, whose diary, of course, is looking freer by the day. Speaking of which, stories continue to circulate that Chelsea want Napoli boss Maurizio Sarri as Conte's replacement. A continuity move, because the team is already putting in some Sarri performances.
I like that as well. Continuity.
Continuity! Yeah, Napoli would require $8 million to release Sarri, but apparently they're quite happy about this because they regard this season as going to be the end of an era one way or the other. Plus, of course, even if they do let him go, he's going to be back free again in 18 months. Corriere dello Sport bucking the trend on this story, though. They say that Napoli plan to keep him and build him one of the strongest teams in Europe. Who are they going to buy? Federico Chiesa and Simone Verdi, quakey continental giants. What do you think about that Corriere story there, James?
Well, they're supposed to be meeting on Friday, De Laurentiis and Maurizio Sarri, but Sarri has dodged this. He said, look, I've got a contract. My mind's on other things, like winning the league title. And, oh, we've got Lazio at the weekend, so I'll be preparing for that. So I'm sorry, Mr. De Laurentiis, you might have to wait a bit.
Hey, and we were talking to Richard Hughes last week on the show, and afterwards he was recounting the various trips he's made with Eddie Howe of Bournemouth to see Napoli's training sessions to see how Sarri works his magic. Eddie Howe apparently blown away by the Sarri method, but Richard blown away by how quickly Sarri has picked up English. He's studying it hard.
Yeah, and I mean, he used to work as an international currency trader for Monte Paschi di Siena, one of the oldest bankers in the world, I think. He used to have trips to London, Frankfurt, and claims to speak a bit of English, but Richard really blown away by the improvements he's been making. I think in some respects he is the perfect manager for Chelsea, not only because of the style of football that he plays, but you look at all this tension between Conte and the key decision makers there when it comes to transfer policy. Sarri famously hates the transfer market. He doesn't want anything to do it. He famously called it the refuge of the weak. Basically, coaches should coach. That's it. Just give me a bunch of players. I don't want any new signings. I'm just going to stick with this team. And you look what he's done at Napoli. The only players he signed are the ones he had at Empoli and other teams like that, Bologna, Udinese. So in that respect, makes perfect sense from Chelsea's point of view.
Certainly does. All right. Good. Well, Napoli have Lazio this weekend, but the game we're going gaga about is, of course, Friday night's Fiorentina-Juventus, a chance for Fiorentina possibly to save their season. I mean, they're down in 11th. They look well out of the picture, even for Europa League places, but get a win against their hated rivals, and I'm sure a lot of that Viola ire would be forgiven. A match this which pits former Fiorentina youth products Chiesa and Bernardeschi against each other. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what reception Bernardeschi gets because, you know, he's a Tuscan boy. He was at the club since he was 12. They gave him the number 10 shirt. They were talking about him becoming the new Antonioni or the new Rui Costa for them. And he decided to join the evil empire instead in the summer. But, yeah, I mean, if we look at this game, at the Artemio Franchi, it's always a bear pit when Juventus go there. The unfortunate thing is that the ultras are holding a protest. They will not be putting on a big choreography because when they've tried to get banners in recent weeks against the owners, the local authority have basically stopped them from doing it, imposing some censorship. And also, they just don't want to make a spectacle of something which would, you know, I suppose, show the owners in a better life. You know, look at this fantastic atmosphere. They don't want to do that because they're in conflict with the Delhi Valley family.
It's a shame because Delhi Valleys were regarded, and possibly this is a while ago, as some of the more forward-thinking, you know, the people on the right side of progress in Italian football. What's gone so very wrong between them and the fans then?
Well, they think there's a lack of ambition from the Fiorentina owners, which, to be fair to them, I mean, they only spend what they can earn from the club. And given that they picked up Fiorentina when they were in oblivion, they didn't even exist anymore. They were called Florencia Viola after the largesse of the Cecchi Gori years. You can understand them not wanting to spend irresponsibly. But I suppose what happened in the summer was, whilst Milan bought an entire team, Fiorentina sold an entire team because not only did Bernardeschi leave, they also lost Borja Valero, their captain. They lost their top scorer, Nikola Kalinic. They lost Matias Vecino. Ciprian Tatarusanu, the goalkeeper, went to play with Claudio Ranieri. Gonzalo Rodriguez left. So it's a completely new team there in Fiorentina and a very young team as well, not only with Chiesa there, but also Cholito Simeone. So they've had ups and downs so far this season, which you can kind of expect from a team that's so kind of green around the ears, I guess.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they managed to get the result against a Juve side that's going to have one eye on that Spurs match, I'm sure. We'll talk about that more later on. Right now, though, it's time for us to stick the keys in our Fiat DeLorean and travel back in time for some classic Golazzo action.
My name, as if you didn't know, is James Horncastle, and although I keep my hair long, I like to keep my beard short. And when it comes to shaving, I insist on Cornerstone. Cornerstone takes all the hassle out of shaving. You'll never run out of blades again. Just let them know how often you shave, and they'll take care of the rest. Get £10 off your first order, and find out more about your perfect shave box at cornerstone.co.uk/totally.
Yeah, Fiorentina Juve, possibly the most one-sided hate match in the world. It's the biggest game of the year in Florence.
Not so much in Turin.
Not so much, just another weekend in Turin.
Well, I mean, this is something I think some Juventus fans think of Torino as well. The Turin derby is coming up.
You know,
they see their rivals really as being Inter and Milan, the ones they traditionally fight for the title with. And more recently, you might say, you know, Roma and Napoli. Yeah, I mean, there was a time when these two were going for the title together, going to the final day of the season, neck and neck on points, 1981-82.
Liam Brady.
And Liam Brady scored his penalty to win the game against Catanzaro, and Ciccio Graziani had a perfectly legitimate goal ruled out against Cagliari. And Franco Zeffirelli, you remember the Oscar-winning director, yeah, seeing Juventus's then president Giampiero Boniperti in the stands at Catanzaro eating his sunflower seeds was like seeing an American mafioso, and I think that ended.
Could he not have gone with a Catanzaro mafioso? Would that not have been?
No, I mean, I think it still led Boniperti to take legal action.
Did it?
Against Cefirelli?
Right, okay.
Yeah. So,
I think even before, I think it's just, you know, people in Florence as a city, they hate everybody. I mean, we used to go to war with the towns down the road. So Figurati, a city up in the north, which declared itself capital of Italy. And there's a major, I think, division between them in terms of lifestyle, in terms of their approach to life and that. But you mentioned that the Liam Brady penalty, which a lot of people would regard as one of the touchstones in Florence's hate for Juventus. The other biggest one that gets mentioned is Roberto Baggio's transfer to La Vecchia Signora in 1990 ahead of the World Cup, which, as legend has it, sparked 3 days of riots along the banks of the Arno.
Yeah, with, I mean, pitch battles between police and obviously very angry Fiorentina fans and, you know, sort of the old men and women on their balconies throwing potted plants at the police, throwing lemons down at the police to stop them attacking the tifosi. But yeah, I mean, Badger during that summer had to be sort of smuggled into Coverciano, which is where the national team train, because, you know, they...
Which is basically part of Florence.
But yeah, just outside of Florence, and they couldn't necessarily guarantee his safety.
Right.
They had, free training sessions, open training sessions to the public, and they had to basically do it all behind closed doors because the Fiorentina fans were so angry.
Badger, obviously a talismanic figure for any Italian football fan, but particularly in that period for Fiorentina fans, the club had kind of taken him in when it looked like his knees might have wrecked an incredibly promising career. And he'd responded by becoming one of their greatest number 10s ever in a club where the number 10 is regarded with particular reverence. So then the fact that the Pontello brothers sold him to Juve, why it would be his fault, I don't know. But anyway, famous game when he made his first appearance back at the Artemio Franchi at the end of the 1990-91 season when Juve lost 1-0 and Baggio, who'd been booed by the home fans, refused to take a penalty for Juve against his former club.
Yeah, because he says he'd trained with the goalkeeper Marecchini for 5 years.
Right.
And Marecchini knew him inside out and he would have missed the penalty anyway. So he told Gigi Maffredi, the Juventus manager at the time, former champagne salesman, that he wasn't going to take the penalty, and so D'Agostino did and missed. Fiorentina won 1-0.
Baggio left the field holding a Fiorentina scarf.
Yeah, and his story really is a tale of two scarves in this move, because one of the reasons why the Juventus fans, or a certain fringe of the Juventus ultras, never warmed to him was because his unveiling at Juventus, he was given a black and white scarf, and instead of kind of holding it up for pictures and draping it around his neck, he just put it on the chair next to him. And obviously when he then goes back to Florence and they throw him this purple scarf and he picks it up and he just looks at it,
clutches it
and puts it on.
He doesn't actually put it on.
No, I mean,
but he does carry it off the field.
But the roar in the crowd
as
he did so is like, yeah, actually, he's not a mercenary. He's not a Judas. He's one of ours.
Wow. Okay, for our classic slice, our most classic slice of Juventus against Fiorentina there, we're going to fast forward a little bit to 1994. Io penso positivo perché son vivo, perché son vivo. Io penso positivo perché son vivo e finché son vivo. Niente nessuno al mondo potrà fermarmi da ragionare. Niente nessuno al mondo potrà fermare questo. Yes indeed. 4th of December 1994, Italy is still reeling to the smash chart sounds of Lorenzo Giovanotti and Io penso positivo. And it's pigging cold at the Stadio degli Alpi in Turin.
Yeah, 7-year-old Claudio Marchisio was in the stands.
7-year-old.
Yeah.
And so were we of ye olde Channel 4. Because it's a big fixture, isn't it, Juve Fiorentina? But Juve coming into this one with one or two problems because Robbie Baggio are injured. They're taking on a Fiorentina side, of course, sporting that wonderful purple kit. Samontana, the sponsors. Look, there's Juve. Can you see him in the classic Kappa, sponsored by Danone? Strip on the sidelines, Lippi puffing a cigar
in one of those fur-lined tracksuits that they had at the time.
Well, and his opposite number, none other than
Claudio Ranieri, who just got Fiorentina back up. They bounced straight back up after their relegation, traumatic one. Battistuta, remember, stayed with them when they went down, as did Stefan Effenberg.
Yeah, but he wasn't there this day in Turin. And Ranieri had his team well on their way to a major upset, thanks to this from Ciccio Baiano.
Arriva poi di gran carriera Baiano e la Fiorentina è in vantaggio. Siamo
and this from Angelo Carbone.
Primo tempo. La palla è per Carbone, il destro e la Fiorentina raddoppia, clamoroso alla delle Alpi.
Damn, Fiorentina 2-0 up in Turin with only just over a quarter of an hour to go. And then, James, pick up the story.
And then it was one of the comebacks of the ages for Juventus. Luca Vialli getting a brace
Orlando butta in mezzo questo pallone, Ravanelli, poi Vialli con la punta del piede ed è 2-2, incredibile rimonta della Juventus.
And then, possibly, is this now one of the most famous goals in all of Italian football?
I think so. It's the one that got me into Italian football.
Really?
Without doubt, yeah. Because Del Piero, what had made his debut a few years earlier, he'd scored his first goal against Padua, I think, in 1992.
So he was kind of like the next, he was like a Baggio 2.0, if you will, with a little bit less of the fantasia, perhaps, but a more pragmatic player. I mean, still a wonderfully creative footballer. But he'd come from a similar region of the country, was vying for the same number 10 shirt, and I think Juve had really seized on him as the man to build their team around.
Yeah, exactly. They were going to go all in on Del Piero. I mean, they at one stage did come close to sort of loaning him to Parma in exchange for Dino Baggio, the other Baggio. But luckily for them, that didn't happen. I mean, Del Piero, I think certainly before his knee injury against Udinese a few years later, was seen as, I'd say, a little bit more of a flair player than he later became. Had to adjust his game. But, I mean, this goal was just wonderful. Alessandro Orlando, the guy, the left back who basically floated this ball in. It's a very speculative ball, saying, you know, it's the best assist he ever laid on for anyone. Francesco Toldo, the goalkeeper for Fiorentina, saying it's the best goal anyone put past me. Gianluca Vialli said he shanked it. Said it hit. It's one of those guns where it hits you on the shin and it just goes in. No one else will say it, but that's how I see it. And I think that was the goal that made Del Piero, because as I mentioned, you know, he'd already scored his first league goal in Serie A a couple of years earlier. He'd already scored his first hat trick against Parma the previous season, but that goal was a goal that went around the world, as they say.
Right, a little bit of Orlando magic.
Ooh.
So Orlando, in my mind, is about the halfway line when he hoofs it upfield.
Yeah, on this kind of...
And how long is there left on the clock? Minutes?
Minutes, yeah.
Minutes. And Del Piero's running into the box, and the ball is in no way aimed at him. All he can do is stick out a leg, but in doing so, he magnificently volleys it past Toldo into the top corner.
Yeah. No, it's sublime. And I think, he still looks back on it. And it was, let's remember, this was one of the first goals he did score of his career. And it was, even at the end of a long and illustrious one, the best he ever scored.
Really? Yeah. And of course, the three people at the Dele Alpi went absolutely crazy.
Can you imagine being behind one of those sort of concrete pillars or something, the stanchions? Because the views at the Dele Alpi were not the best. You probably would have missed it. Yeah.
Pah, amazing. Wow, you mentioned one or two of their names. Always fun to have a look back through the team sheets. Ranieri's Fiorentina, Toldo there in goal. Stefano Pioli, who's of course currently the Fiorentina manager.
Yeah,
in charge. It was lining up in the.
And he did play for Juventus. And,
of course he did. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean he was so bad for them that I think on his first day, his training session, he was meant to do like some passing exercise or keepy uppies with Michel Platini. And basically, he couldn't do more than two or three. And so Platini got so frustrated, he just walked off. So Trapattoni, who was the coach at the time, basically said, I'll do them with you, Stefano. And yeah, sort of helped him manage four or five.
He is a sweetheart, isn't he, Trapattoni? That Fiorentina side, of course, is pretty much top-loaded with talent. Because up front, apart from Baiano, we mentioned, you had Manuel Ricosta. Ooh. Who notoriously could do anything he wanted on a football pitch, with the possible exception of actually scoring.
Yeah,
that was his one drawback. But a wonderful player.
But Batistuta went on this game,
and having
scored in 10 straight games.
Wow.
He'd broken the record held by Ezio Pascuti for 32 years. And Pascuti, I think, was in his 50s or 60s at the time, had gone into selling insurance, was just pleased that people finally remembered his name after sort of being gone and forgotten. But... yeah, Batigol didn't, of course, score in this game.
No, but he did get a statue thanks to his exploits.
He did, and
later that year, it was the following year, wasn't it? 95.
Yeah, because Fiorentina had just come up after being relegated. He stayed with them. He could have gone to any club in the world because he'd already made a big name for himself in Italy. But curiously, James, we're recording on February the 7th. Now, February the 7th, 1999. Fiorentina were playing Milan, and they were top of the table, winter champions, and this was the game that Edmundo then went to the Rio Carnival. Batistuta got injured, and Fiorentina's best chance of winning the title since 1966 went up in smoke.
Yeah, Edmundo had a wonderful time at the carnival. So
yeah, the animal.
The animal. On that Juve team sheet, you had Angelo Peruzzi in goal, Massimo Carrera, who's these days running Spartak Moscow.
Yeah, he's from in the Champions League against Liverpool.
Paulo Sousa.
Future Fiorentina manager, of course.
Future player of the year, actually. City player of the year, I think, the following year at Juve. But, yeah, he then took over at Fiorentina and, of course, QPR. Moreno Torricelli. Wow, what a story he had. So he was a man who essentially was a carpenter in a factory and was discovered playing Sunday League football, no?
They played a friendly against him, against his team, Caratese.
Caratese, good
and,
knowledge.
Yeah, thought he was so good they would snap him up.
And he went all the way to the World Cup.
Yeah.
Incredible. A Jesus-like figure with his long hair and beard. It was also from carpentry stock, of course. Also on that team sheet, that Gianluca Vialli, who obviously got a brace in this and generally was... I think when people look back at his Serie A goals, they're always struck by how many bicycle kicks he did. Not something he was famous for later on, but in early years at Juve, he was just ridiculous.
Yeah, and his perm before he was bald. That was really
back in
something.
His Samp days.
Yeah.
Of course, Fabrizio Ravanelli, the white feather. He had one more season at Juventus before he went to Barra. And that young lad, Alessandro Del Piero, who went on to become the symbol of Juve, largely, as you say, thanks to this game and this goal.
Del Piero, esterno straordinario, e la Juventus è in vantaggio. Quando sembrava che ormai le due squadre fossero quasi paghe del 2-2, Del Piero segna un gol memorabile, davvero bellissima l'esecuzione di Del Piero sul lungo lancio di Orlando.
It's funny, Del Piero, Juve, he was saying the club went full on in him and actually made their mascot a giant pupazzo called Alex. Essentially, they decided that he was going to be almost kind of the walking mascot for this club. It never really hit the heights of popularity. Why is that? Because he shows so shy in interviews, or because his Juventus were so closely tied in with some of the most controversial periods of recent Italian football?
Well, this is the year in which the triad come in of Moggi, Giraldo, and Bettiga, and everything changes. They start to dominate the league, dominate the transfer market, and are associated with a lot of the dark side of things that that Juventus are. And some of those players of that era, I think, and Juventus more generally are disliked because of it.
Yeah.
I think, to be honest, Del Piero is still very well liked and still popular, but not as transcendent. The love for him isn't as universal as it was for Totti, for example, and for certainly for Badshah.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite interesting that Badshah played for all three of the big clubs, Milan, Inter, and Juventus. But what I would say is he's
recognised for his work with Azzurri.
Yeah. Or he went around playing for Bologna, Fiorentina, and was seen as a much more universal player who wasn't really attached to these big three, the big powers in Italy, I'd say.
He went down to Serie B with Buffon, but Buffon, I think, would win a popularity contest between the two of them any day.
It's very interesting to see, obviously, when Del Piero would have liked to have retired at Juventus and played as long as he wanted there, but he was told that that wasn't going to be the case. Mm. And Andrea Agnelli, the president, even though Del Piero said he would play for nothing, essentially, or play on whatever terms Juventus gave him, said, no, be off with you.
Which is, you don't think that's going to happen
with
Buffon?
That's not going to happen with Buffon, who gets on very well with Agnelli and is the godfather to his, third child. And so
Del Piero had to go to Australia.
He did. Yeah.
All right. All right then, James. Well, let's finish off with some pensieri positivi about Tuesday night's clash at the Allianz Stadium. Juve, injuries are mounting up. Dybala is going to be missing for the first leg. Mm-hmm. Blaise Matuidi now out of the picture as well. Defensively, they're unbelievably sound, but how are they going to cope with Kane and company?
Well, I think, you have to go back to, 2013 to find the last time Juventus lost in Europe at home. That was to the Bayern side that won the treble. The Allianz Stadium is a fortress for them. And I think the reason why Spurs can maybe have some pensieri positivi is because, as you mentioned, the injuries, but also Juventus have a really poor record against English sides in knockout competitions. So I think you have to go back all the way to the 80s to find the last time they actually triumphed against an English side.
Really? Yeah. Oh, because the Man United, that would all have been in group stages.
And then, of course, the Roy Keane game was right. When they knocked them out. So,
But Chelsea more recently, Juve have looked more than a match for Premier League champions.
They have. I mean, I'd say Juventus, even against Man City in the group stages, a couple of years ago, were very good. They have established themselves as, again, one of the part of the elite. You know, I'd say Juventus merit to be considered one of the favourites for the competition, you know, every year now, you know, which wasn't the case for a long time after their relegation for the Calciopoli scandal and the time they spent away from the Champions League. But a lot been made. The sort of matchup between the managers is really interesting. Italian papers have done a lot of kind of work on Pochettino's Piedmont origins. You know, his grandparents obviously were from there and then moved to Argentina. And Allegri, when Allegri was once very close to taking the Spurs job, when Franco Baldini was more influential at Spurs than he is now. So I think two managers who I think look at the game through similar glasses, I think.
Right. Some interesting storylines there. Mm. That match coming up on Tuesday. That's it for this little trip into the wonderful world of calcio. James, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Look forward to hearing you again on the Totally Football Show in the very, very near future. Meantime, listeners, many thanks for being with us. And from all of us here, it's arrivederci.
You've been listening to Golazzo, the Totally Italian Football Show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
That was pretty good, wasn't it? Not nearly enough Football League, though. Why don't you give the Totally Football League show a try? You'll find us on Audioboom, iTunes, all the other places you get your podcasts.